You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Smith. Fires over the middle. Great grab by Metcalf out in front, and he will go all the way for a touchdown. 73 yards to the left. Looks toward Lamb. Shoulder shake. Throws. That's going to be caught by Ferguson. Touchdown. Lockett comes to the slot. Here comes Parsons, and he forces the pass. Incomplete, and that will wrap it up.
Woo-wee. That will wrap up a 41-35 Cowboys victory on Thursday Night Football. Maybe you couldn't tell it from Al's voice there, but we got the best Thursday night game of the year. And we got
maybe
the perfect.
Maybe ever.
Who knows? I'd have to go through it. We got the perfect guest for it, too. It's Steven Ruiz of The Ringer, who's been doing yeoman's work all around the podcast land. It's Steven Ruiz week, and what better game to have him on for than the Geno and Dak, our gods among us showcase. Thank you, Steven.
I texted you right after that Geno touchdown to open the game. He knew I was coming on today. He was going to give us a show.
The last time you came on was the he don't write back game for Geno. So it's been too long. And this was a great Geno game, but it does feel a little beside the point to start with Geno. The Cowboys put up 41 points in a shootout in a game that there were no punts, according to Scott Hansen's researcher at Red Zone, and who am I to doubt his researcher at Red Zone? It's only the fourth game in the history of the NFL to have no punts. Five if you include the Colts, Chiefs, Peyton Manning versus Dick Vermeil and Trent Green showdown in 2004. That was like my first season covering the league. That was exciting. This was just a preposterously great offensive performance by both quarterbacks, both teams. But to me, we start with just like the majesty, I would guess, of Dak Prescott right now, that he just has an answer for everything opposing defenses, especially the Seahawks defense, was trying to do.
Yeah, I thought Seattle played well defensively. There was a lot of talk about the sacks.
They didn't get a stop.
I mean, considering that, they were putting him under pressure. Now, he was making tight window throws. I really think there's an alternate universe where you put two other quarterbacks into this game, and they have to handle that pressure that both quarterbacks had to deal with all day, and it looks horrible. And we don't get anywhere close to 35-31 or whatever the final score ended up being. That was, I thought the two quarterbacks were the story of the game. And do you watch on the Prime Vision?
That gives you like the all 22. I do enjoy that. I got a little Schwartzstein action in my life. Yes.
Right. I love that. It was just a magical performance from that view too. It really allowed you to appreciate what these guys were doing.
Yeah. Early on, you know, I'm thinking, man, these Cowboys receivers are open. As the game wore on, I'm with you. The pressure built up. The windows got a little tighter, but Dak specifically, and I misspoke by saying they didn't get a single stop, the Seahawks defense. There was one stop all night by the Seahawks defense, and that was in, I'm counting it now, 9 drives, not counting the kneel down drives. And that was just when CeeDee Lamb dropped a ball, a wide open, just, you know, short pass on fourth down. Otherwise, there literally would not have been a drive that the Cowboys did not score on. And the thing that impresses me is he just has answers for everything. Like, I think of actually a fourth and one situation where he checked out of the play two different times where they were clearly going to try to stop the sneak up the middle. Then I don't know what he saw the second time, but he checked it again and he checked it, you know, to the perfect play, a run to the outside and they get it. So even on plays where he's not throwing the ball, he's just kind of seeing everything you're doing and he's making all the right decisions. And he's not missing any throws. I mean, he was just on the money with just about every throw tonight.
And then I think he's adding on top of that, like the old school Dak creation stuff out of structure.
Yes.
He is the best quarterback in the league statistically out of structure. Not Josh Allen, not Patrick Mahomes, not Lamar Jackson. None of these guys. Dak Prescott.
What do you mean? Like out of the pocket or plus 2.5 seconds? How do they measure that?
Out of the pocket and PFF, according to PFF, when the defense, the pass rush forces the quarterback to move off of his spot. So it's not a straight drop back. He is the best in the NFL by PFF grade. He's got like a low 90s grade. The next highest guy is like in the 70s.
Mm. It is ridiculous. And I do think his season changed on that Sunday night game against the Chargers where he ran for that touchdown. And I think he ran the play before on a play that actually he normally wouldn't have this year. He scrambled. He came up just short on like a 3rd and 9 or something to set up a 4th and 1. And he put his head down and I was like, ooh, there's Dak running again. That's what we always want. And I swear since then, the rushing yards aren't crazy. Like tonight it's 23, but there's 4 plays where he helps himself with his legs running, which is just a really important 4 plays. And then, as you say, also just making great decisions outside the pocket, which he did, you know, on a number of throws tonight. It was just like there, unless you have just an elite pass rush and the Seahawks just don't, it's hard to think of how you're going to get this guy down. And it's tough against this Cowboys offensive line, which is playing really well.
That's why I would say, like, I thought the defense didn't play too badly. And I didn't think the defensive game plan was too bad because I thought the way they got to Dak Prescott was blitzing. There was a lot of like corner pressures, a lot of like zone pressures. And I thought Seattle's approach to the game, their thinking going into the game was, we're not going to get to Dak unless we play like a reckless style, and that's our only chance of being in this game. It didn't work out, but I think it like makes sense as a strategy going into it. And I think if they would have just rushed 4 and dropped back 7, Dak would have picked them apart.
I mean, we're both Geno fans, and because of that, I've become a quasi Seahawks fan. Maybe you haven't gone that far, and so the defense was frustrating me. Yes, they're sending a lot of blitzes, but they can never finish him. They're just bouncing off of him. There's that play, Daryl Taylor, who's not like a safety. I mean, he's a defensive end, has him in a bear hug, and I don't know what happened. The play, Dak just like shrugs him off, and that would have been, like, there were so many plays like that. Adams had another one, whereas like if they could just bring him to the ground or bring some of the receivers that caught the ball behind the line of scrimmage occasionally to the ground, it's like they would have them in big time negative yardage situations and they just couldn't do it. And so again, once that Chargers game happened, I was like, wow, he played just about perfect game that game. And then the next week he's like perfect that week. And people weren't really picking up on it yet because they were playing lesser teams and the record wasn't as good then. But he's almost been throwing like a perfect game every week since week 6. It's great. He at this point is, I think, going to come out of this week, you know, one of, if not the MVP front runners, which is crazy because he was like plus 3,000 3 weeks ago.
And it's high degree of difficulty. It's not like he's like dinking and dunking out there. He's throwing like these covered seam balls, these tight window passes. He's throwing on the run. He's throwing out of structure. He's throwing with guys hanging off of him like we saw tonight. He's upped his game another level. And I think he's finally starting to get credit for stuff he already did well. Like he's finally starting to get credit for like the pre-snap stuff and being that brain before the snap. Like you heard Kirk Herbstreit tonight kind of compare him to Peyton Manning in the pre-snap phase. And I think that's apt. And I think it's something he never got credit for. And one of the reasons I think he's so polarizing as a player, even though he's been this like steadfast winner and guy who produces at a high level since he's entered the league, beyond being a Dallas Cowboys quarterback and everything that comes with that, is that it's kind of hard to appreciate the things he's really good at because they're so subtle, especially if you're not watching week to week and you're not watching like the film and you don't really like understand what's going on pre-snap. I just think like if we gave him that credit, I don't think we would be having these debates about Dak Prescott every offseason.
I've been trying to give him that credit. I brought up the Manning, you know, that he, I don't think he's Manning or Brady, but as that generation was still playing but aging out, I was like, well, he's the guy that's of the young generation that's like the most like that. Like he's the quarterback's quarterback. He's how, you know, Greg Cosell wants the game to be played inside the pocket and figuring it out mentally, and it's all coming together. And he's at an age where it's all perfect. He's got a unreal number one receiver, and I think this game is going to be important for him, just in the way, not important for him in terms of what you're saying. He's playing great. Nothing needs to change. But MVP race, and then their playoff race, and even as a team, they were really tested in this game by a good opponent. I know Seattle was struggling coming into this game, but their offense certainly wasn't struggling tonight. Like, I don't know if a team is going to beat up this Cowboys defense any better than the Seahawks did tonight. And so Dak was really pushed in this game. The score was 28-20 coming out of halftime. Once Geno got the kickoff in to start the second half, went right down the field to go 28-20. Cowboys get it closer, and then the Seahawks score again to DK to start the fourth quarter. And so it's 35-27. He has to make a fourth quarter comeback. They have the field goal drive. They have another touchdown drive there by Dak. And then they tack on the field goal late. So it's just kind of like those situations that I know, like they shouldn't need to pass these tests, but they do need to, because they need to win some close games. It's not just going to be blowouts in the playoffs. And they found a way to do that, even though I have some issues with Mike McCarthy's game management, and we can get to that in a minute. It sort of doesn't matter when you only face, I think they only had four third downs in the second half. I mean, that's the thing. These two teams put up these score with very few possessions. You know, it wasn't like a 13-12 possession game where they put up these numbers. Like they had almost no margin for error, and he hit it. And he could have actually had more. There was that CD drop on fourth down. And then one of the best throws he had the night, which was
right,
was the field goal drive in the fourth quarter that came up short, which looked like a crazy pass. He put it between three people, but it got to CD, and he actually didn't bring it down in that scenario.
That's why I was like watching the end of the game, and I was like, no matter how this ends, it's going to be very disappointing for one of these teams. It's going to be very disappointing for us for having to like come up with losers in this game, because I just thought it was played at such a high level that even if Dallas had lost, I don't think I would have come on here and been like, oh, they're frauds or everything we thought they were. Like, Geno just played so well and under pressure, too. It's not like Dallas made it easy on him. At one point in the fourth quarter, he was like 11 for 12 under pressure and averaging 10 yards per attempt.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane. Nobody does that.
Let's get to the Geno portion. We've put it all off long enough. But I'm with you. Like, there are no big losers here. I'm gonna be a little annoyed about the Seahawks defense later, just in terms of roster construction and everything, and some of the game management stuff, and Jason Myers missed another important kick in this game, but just in terms of the way this season shapes up, before we move to Geno, it's like, it was absolutely vital though they got this win to stay in the NFC East race. I still think they can win this division, because I just think, you know, the Eagles are underdogs this week, and then the Cowboys are probably playing for first place next week. And so that's like, it doesn't get much bigger than that. They actually do have it right there in front of them. I know their schedule's brutal, so it'd be hard to finish that out, but there's a very real chance that they're in first place in the NFC East and they're going to have extra rest going into that Eagles game in 10 days. Whereas the Seahawks, I felt like this was their chance to sneak one in here during this brutal stretch, and they couldn't get it done. And it's so surprising to me, Steven, that they put up 35 points in the first 50 minutes of this game. Their offensive line and everything going into this game and their offensive cohesion did not indicate that this performance was coming.
No, I did not expect this performance, and I did not expect it because of that matchup, the offensive line versus the defensive line. And Dallas's defensive line, despite not getting a lot of sacks, they did get pressure, and I thought they won for the most part. I thought Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator, called a great game. I didn't like the calls at the end. I thought that's my one thing against Waldron, is that he gets a little galaxy brained at time. He kind of outthinks himself a little bit. I don't know what that last play was, but it kind of looked like a screen pass, like a late slip screen pass, which is an interesting call in fourth and five with the game on the line.
Fourth
and two, and it gets blown up, and it never really had a chance.
Parsons got there, and the next in stats measured in 1.3 seconds. I mean, it was Parsons
Yeah, they tried to like
totally protect, unblocked. Yeah. I'm not sure where the protection went wrong, whether that was supposed to be the running back. It went wrong somewhere. They needed to reset. I don't know like who that's on that. It's happened more than you would want to for the Seahawks this year. And yeah, to get into that position, and there were a couple drives in the fourth quarter where they turned it over on downs and they were in short yarded situations after having such a good night on third down. Finally, they've been a terrible third down team all year. They kind of went back in the crucible to just a couple bad plays there on third and one, fourth and one. I'm also thinking about the drive before the same thing happened.
It was good to see Geno adjust, because there has been talk about him getting the ball out quicker. And I think that is one thing you saw. You saw him make that adjustment. And I think it would have been a big red flag if you heard that talk from Geno, you heard that talk from the offensive coordinator, and then he couldn't do it. So I think that, like, I think this was a, I don't think it, obviously it derails whatever playoff hope Seattle had, or kind of, but
they still got it. They still have a chance,
but it didn't help.
It hurts. They had an opportunity tonight for
but
sure.
I think this is a good sign for the team going forward. Like, I think like that Geno still has these moments when he can light up a game and he can match a MVP candidate throw for throw.
Right. And, you know, statistically, he's been getting rid of the ball about the same time this year. The pressure's just been getting there faster. He's been avoiding sacks much better. Actually, that used to be, you know, one of the worst parts of his game last year. Even in his breakout, was still like below average, but not terrible. This year, it's pretty good. And you saw that tonight. Like, if you had looked at the box score, you would have no idea. And I know Parsons got three QB hits, but you would have no idea that Parsons kind of dominated this game. And Lawrence had a good game too, because Geno was getting rid of the ball. I mean, some of those dimes early to DK, it was also great to see DK have a game like this, because I think that the Thanksgiving game kind of encapsulated what's been a really disappointing season for DK, not winning contested catches, just being kind of a little lazy with his routes on the sideline, stuff like that. And tonight he was DK, what you imagine him to be. That first dime that Geno threw to him just felt like it like kind of freed the two of them, and he threw so many good passes tonight. It was a beautiful thing. I mean, being Geno, guys, to have him have this night in an island game, it did feel like a release for me, a weight off my shoulders, you know.
And I like how you got to see him thrive under pressure. Like, you got to see that this is what he's been dealing with all year. He's been dealing with this type of protection and receivers that I don't think have been running great routes. And it's kind of hard to say when you're outside of the building, but there's been a lot of miscommunications. I think that's the best way you could put it. And you didn't really see that tonight. Like, you saw Geno get rid of the ball and the receivers ended up where they were supposed to be. And the ball ended up where it was supposed to be. I think if this team could find any consistency, they might look like the team we see when they're at their highest. Like, when they have these breakout performances, because they are capable of it. We've seen it like a handful of times over the last 2 years, just stringing them together.
Right. And defensively, they have so many players. You would think that they can have some better games than the ones that they've had. And I'll get into it in a minute. But they've just been a sub-mediocre defense, like a very below average defense. And you saw it tonight. But if they can get their offense going like this, they did have Abe Lucas back in the run game, which, you know, maybe that helps. Zach Charbonnet, though, was 19 for 60. He did have a 39-yard catch, too, but he left late with a knee injury and was immediately ruled doubtful, which that is not a great sign. Maybe Kenneth Walker's back next week. But Smith and Jigba made some plays until he had that miscommunication on the turnover on downs on the drive before the last one. And Lockett, I think one of the plays Seahawks fans are going to remember is the Seahawks are up 35-30. They're driving. I mean, right? They had the ball up 35-30 to possibly kick a field goal to go up 8 halfway through the fourth quarter, or even, you know, score a touchdown and kind of put the game away. And Geno has one of his best anticipation throws of the night. It gets there, you know, after Lockett, you know, makes his turn, and it hits him right in the helmet, and Geno gets sacked the next play. it was a pressure and a throwaway the next play, but that drive ended right there, and they would have been in field goal range on one of the better Geno passes of the night. They're robbing our boy, Steven.
They really are, and I feel like we're talking about how well these quarterbacks played. I don't think the receivers played all that well outside of DK.
Now we're amazing. Sounding like we're just like it's a pro Geno thing. I mean,
there DK were a played, lot of drops. There were a lot of balls that hit.
There were some drops. Fant had a nice catch.
I mean on both sides.
Yeah, on both sides, certainly. There were some drops. I mean, Smith and Jigba, I like that he's getting more consistent. He had the touchdown that was overturned on review, but at least he drew a long PI on that call. There were a lot of PI calls, and we'll hit that. But first, we're going to take a break.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in, to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets.
Yeah. It's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar.
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we're back. You know, I mentioned before the break, I mean, the penalties were a huge story of this game. There were 257 penalty yards, Stephen, in this game. That is the most for a game in regulation since Bears-Bills 2018, which I don't have. It was in November. I don't have an immediate recollection, but
I do.
Likely, Mitch Trubisky, Josh Allen showdown.
Nathan Peterman.
Oh, was it? Wait, really?
Yeah, I think it was a Nathan Peterman special.
Al Michaels commenting tonight on the penalties. Let's listen.
We're going to take the rest of the night off of the Cleek Blakeman call of the game. Yeah! You buy him?
Sure.
I was getting so mad. I don't know if he was having, occasionally he has like senior moments, but like he literally said like, oh, and guess what's next? When the flags came out, like on 4 straight plays at one point in the third quarter, he was just like beside himself.
I mean, Al, this was a great performance, a throwback performance for Al, in my opinion. He was back in Geno and Dak. He was right there with them.
I'll buy that. I would like a little more excitement there at the end. I would like, it's more of a Herb Street thing, but there were a lot of game management situations at the end of the game that were very interesting, and they didn't really like go over ahead of time or even afterwards. You know, the Cowboys had the ball. We might as well, you know, talk about it now. They had the ball after they turned the Seahawks over on downs, and they get it with let's see how long was left in the game. They get it with 1:43 to go. And they basically, or no, sorry. They get it with 3:11 to go. That makes more sense. At the Seahawks 49 yard line. And 2 first downs basically wins the game there. And they immediately get into the red zone on that drive. And they get into a situation where it's 3rd and 3. The Seahawks are all out of timeouts, and there's 1:40, maybe a little more left on the clock. And they throw a pass from, I think it was the 14, into the end zone. I know it's one-on-one CeeDee Lamb, and he's been so great tonight, but it wasn't really close. He was well covered. The ball was, you know, it was kind of through a safe pass to make sure it didn't get interception, and it's incomplete. And I love being aggressive, but that's actually not being aggressive. That was just bad game management. If they run the ball there, it goes under a minute, and you run the ball there because it's 4th and 3, and you kind of plan on you run the ball twice and you win the game and it's over with. And if you don't get it the second time, it's under a minute left and they're inside like the 10-yard line or the 13-yard line. I thought that was crazy by McCarthy.
No, that's always the thing with McCarthy, right? like every time I'm starting to think McCarthy's turning it around, like getting Dak to play like this is an accomplishment. I have to give him credit. I'm not going to take credit away from him for doing that.
Yes.
But these are the moments where you're like, uh-oh, like that's going to come up in the playoffs. And I don't think he's going to make the right decision. Like there was even like a 2-point conversion chance earlier in the game. And I don't know what the analytics say about it, but a lot of people are wondering why they didn't go for it to tie it
up. Yeah,
it
was 28-26. It was like, why were you not going for two at that moment?
And then
they got it later.
It's not just McCarthy. Like, I got questions about Dan Quinn.
Okay.
And it's the same questions that anyone would have about Dan Quinn and that like style of defense that we've seen. Like, we see it in Seattle, like that cover three lineup and play. We're not going to like do anything to trick you. I just think it's a defense that can be schemed up, and it's a defense that can be exploited by the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And in order to win a Super Bowl, you have to beat the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And that's my worry.
Yeah, it's a fair point that like the Cowboys defense has been great this year. I mean, it hasn't been like Ravens, Browns level, and it's got great talent, but this is the first game in a long time. And granted, they haven't played many great offenses. They did a pretty good job, I thought, against the Eagles overall. They gave up more points than they should have, but they played well. It was disarming to see like a team go up and down the field throwing the ball on them. I mean, Deron Bland, Michael said, gave up more yards in that first half than any cornerback in any half of football all year. So his defensive player of the year candidacy was always silly to me. I mean, give him an all pro. That's fine. But people were trying to talk that up this week. Like, that's over with now. Even though he had an electric interception. That was not even a bad throw by Geno, I didn't think.
Right.
If anything, Bland just kind of bodied Lockett out of position on a play. Lockett like had position when the ball was thrown, and Bland made a great play. But Bland got cooked in this game, and you're right, maybe the secondary, like do you think there are holes here like in the back seven essentially for Dallas?
I do think it can be attacked, and I think if you can mitigate the pass rush, which I don't think Seattle did in any shape or form tonight, but I think there are teams that are capable of doing that, like San Francisco, as we've seen, that I think it's going to be an issue. And I don't think like Dan Quinn's style of defense offers you like schematic help. It's really reliant on execution and talent, and I think fundamentals, which is like a great way to play, and it makes sense with their talent. It's just when you run into offenses that can match your talent, it becomes a problem then.
Yeah, because you know who, like Bland is playing outstanding. Gilmore's still a really solid starting corner. Odighizuwa and the guys inside are good. Parsons is just outrageous. I think I might, as great as Garrett's been, I'm still holding out my vote there. That it's like we got a long way to go, and like in my heart, I still feel like Parsons is actually better and having a better season, even though it's not quite there. So I'm allowing the possibility that he might just close really strong. And then Lawrence had a huge fourth down stop on Charbonnet. It's just those little moments of the game where like their best players stepped up, like Jake Bobo on a screen the play before. It looked like he had more yards to pick up. I mean, these are what you think about when you're a Seahawks fan. I'm a quasi Seahawks fan now. What happened to me?
You don't get to claim that. Aren't you a Patriots fan? You don't get to claim that.
I mean, I jump on different teams depending on the year, and this Patriots team was dead
Patriots
to me before.
Start
we
losing
started
a little bit. And
I mean,
our
my great friend Chris Wessely, and they already made fun of me. I remember saying, even as the Patriots run was over, I was like, I'm not gonna be as into it once Brady's gone. It's just like, because I know it'll never be the same. Like, what's the point of chasing that high? I mean, you're a Panthers fan, so you've had a tough week. That's why you've
been
busy.
That's how I was with Cam. That's how once Cam left, I'd like, I'm a Panthers fan's a strong word, is how I'll put it.
You've been busy. They got you just like doing the whole podcast circuit. You did Mina's show. We should have coordinated me and Mina. So it's like, it's maybe too much Ruiz for the people out there.
Nah, it's not enough. The people need more. Yeah, they're like trotting me out playing like Sarah McLachlan music with the sad puppies. Like, that's who I am.
It is tough. What is your opinion of the here we go?
Sure.
Yeah. Here we go. Like, do you hear it while you're walking around? Is it just like part of your life, like it is mine at this point?
It is. I didn't really notice it until people started pointing it out. I always felt like Cam Newton had a weird one too. So I'm like kind of partial to them, and I don't hate it. like everyone else does?
What were Cam's? He was always high in my cadence rankings. He had a nice deep voice, but I can't think of him right off the top of my head.
I think it was similar. I think it might have been Here We Go.
Yeah.
No. It was like ready. It was something like that.
Ready. Nice and deep. And Dak's just got that bass. It really started for me in the Rams game. I don't know why I didn't notice it before then. I still want to get on Pete Carroll before we go. Just because of the way they've built this team. Like, as I see Jamal Adams getting pressures, but not really finishing the play on those blitzes. And when I see him, like, in position, but not doing anything about the ball when the ball's in the air and they're throwing it to Jake Ferguson to win the game. And there were other plays like that. And I think about what they gave up for Adams. I know he's gotten hurt. And Wagner has been good, but, you know, he'll get frozen a little bit in coverage, like on that first tight end and that first touchdown. He's not even moving. And then, you know, Daryl Taylor's bouncing off him. And I just think of all the picks, and they traded that pick for Leonard Williams, a second round pick. And I just think they came into this game 23rd in DVOA. I know it's the Cowboys, but the Cowboys looked as good or better against this defense than they've looked against anyone. So that net number is going to go down to like 26. It's a defensive coach. They've been above average one time, Steven, since 2017 in terms of DVOA. And they were 13th that year in the COVID year. So even that year, it's not like they were great. It's like, I don't know. I don't really believe in building around defense anyways, but they've put too much into it to me for this whole thing to make any sense, because the offense, like, it's, you've got a good quarterback, but you don't have a top five quarterback. Right, you need your defense and running game to help out.
Yeah, it's tough. I think Pete Carroll's a good head coach, but I agree with, it's kind of like the Belichick thing where you got to separate the coach from the team builder.
I think he's a good coach too. And it's not like a total thing. It's just their defense is disappointing. Like it's very often less than the sum of their parts. And he's a defensive coach. It's never more than the sum of their parts. You would think just by randomness, they would luck into like a number six defense season one of these years, but they don't. I'm really surprised they're below average. I'm surprised.
No, that was kind of the point I was going to make. I think like, the thing that we kind of overrate with Carroll maybe is his defensive mastery or whatever you want to call it. Like, I think that's the overrated part. I think the way like he motivates a locker room and keeps a team together, I think that's the secret stuff.
Yeah.
But like his best defense is, I mean, give me five Hall of Famers and I can give you like a top 15 defense at least. Like he had Earl Thomas and he had Richard Sherman, and that like, that wasn't even how his reputation was built. His reputation was built on like the 90s 49ers who had like 10 Hall of Famers on their roster.
Well, he did it at USC too. And it was like, it was the right defense for that time.
They had talent on that team too, though.
Right. Like, right. And it's the Belichick Brady argument. It's the Walsh, like Montana. It's always symbiotic. Like that's football. That was the right, he was the right coach for those groups of players. And he was right to target the certain body types. And he hit the lottery and he made it, like maxed it out, you know, except for finishing out that Super Bowl against the Patriots. But, you know, he maxed it out. But that was a 5-year run in the defense. You know, it's no longer happening.
By the way, did you notice the moment? Then they had 4th-and-1 at the end of the half.
No.
They threw it. Seattle threw it again. It's 4th-and-1. And they threw the slant. It was like their same route combination too. They threw the slant. Geno completed the slant. Russ couldn't complete it. Difference in the Super Bowl.
Right. And man, now I forget, because I was running around at one point and then caught back up. The Seahawks also ran like the same concept as the Patriots go ahead touchdown in the Super Bowl. Like, the Cowboys ran the same concept, right, against the Seahawks, but basically the Patriots had run to go ahead. So it was like a fun little vintage night. We got Dan Quinn. We got it all. This was beautiful. We didn't have a punt. We got all these penalties. This was it. This was the game to have Steven Ruiz on.
I appreciate it.
Steven, where can we check out your work? I know where. It's The Ringer. What days are your podcasts on? Give me the lowdown.
Wednesdays and Monday mornings.
Okay. In the Ringer NFL feed. You've got the quarterback rankings.
Yeah. Outstanding. Update on Wednesday.
We should have like a quarterback rankings off between you and our new QB index writer, Nick Shook.
I've read it. I read his every week. I keep an eye on the competition.
Oh yeah, he's great, and he helps us out on our Sunday nights. Because look, you've been doing this a while. He's been doing it a while now too. But just started the QB thing. But he's bigger than you. Like he's just like a intimidating looking guy. Like he's huge. So.
All right, then his quarterback rankings are the best.
Just
on the
know
internet.
That. No, I just wanted you to know because you've probably never seen him. Just like check out Shook. We call him the Pipe. Just check out like his little AVI. But yeah, okay. People should check out Steven. I've been following his work now for a while. Steven is young, and yet now he's a veteran. He's been in the game a while, and people should read everything he writes and check him out on the podcast. That will do it for tonight. It was a fun one.
It was a great one, and it was great talking to you about it.
Stephen Ruiz week is over, but the podcast never ends. We will be back on Sunday with the flagship show. Until then, heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.